It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We explore a community-based learning program for at-risk and justice-involved teens at Dane County Detention Center. It's called Making Justice, and teens learn skills in interviewing and audio production to make a podcast, and that is helping them envision a future outside of the justice system. Call in with a question, share comments, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. D-Star teaches the audio workshop as part of Madison Public Library's The Bubbler, and Star hosts the Out of D-Box podcast focused on supporting currently and formerly incarcerated people and their families. D, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Good morning, Kate.
Good morning. This week, you are concluding another Making Justice audio workshop. What are your biggest takeaways from this latest class of students at Dane County Juvenile Detention Center?
My biggest takeaways is just I see the fire and the passion in these kids. I just actually had platinum recording artist Cuckoo Cow, who had a number one Billboard hit in 2001. He's a artist based out of Milwaukee, come to the Dane County Detention Center and shelter to speak with the kids. So they were super excited, got a lot of great advice from him, and it was just a great experience.
Is it difficult for the teens to open up, for you to establish trust with them and gain rapport, especially in a difficult environment?
I've been doing it for over a year now, so I have my little tips and tricks. I can open them up in probably about 10 minutes. First day,
yes. What is the structure of the audio workshop?
So basically what we do is the first day I come in and I teach them how to set up audio, how to get everything up and running. And then I teach them the basics on how to conduct an interview. And then they practice on each other. And then I let them know who they're going to be interviewing the next day. And they come up with some questions. They do their research on the subject. And then the next day I bring in the subject and they actually get to interview that person and use the skills that I taught them yesterday.
From what walks of life do these people come from who the students interview?
All walks of life. I usually start the class off with an icebreaker. An icebreaker goes, if time and money weren't a factor, what would you want to be when you grow up? So, based off their answers, I try to find someone in the community that has that role so they can actually talk to a real person. So, some of them say, hey, I want to get into real estate or I want to fix cars. So I'll go and find a mechanic or I'll go and find a real estate agent. Or someone say, hey, I want to be an artist. I want to be a rapper. So I'll go find a rapper and say, hey, come in and speak to the kids. And it usually happens.
I think about your microphone setup, that it is a physical thing there. It's also symbolic. It's giving voice to someone that, these teens are being seen, their voice being amplified. How do these teens feel about that ability to be seen and be heard?
It's funny because a lot of the times these kids have never heard themselves on a microphone.
Mm-hmm.
So it's always so great to see them, to see their faces the first time they actually hear their voices on the microphone. Some of them just burst into laughter. Some of them get really shy. Some of them are just really raring to go. So it's more about, it's really therapeutic for them. So they know they're being heard. Sometimes for the first time, they feel like they're actually being heard because the kids come from all types of walks of life. So some of them have been, trafficked. Some of them have been abused. Some of them have, come from broken homes. So this is like the first time that somebody's actually listening to them.
We're talking about an audio workshop through Madison Public Library's Making Justice program. The instructor, D. Star, is here. You can join in with your questions and comments along the way at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Dee, the Making Justice program, as I mentioned, part of the Madison Public Library's The Bubbler, launched roughly a decade ago, explores different types of art like painting and video projects. For you, as a podcaster, what does audio storytelling bring to the table?
I would say that it brings like more of a therapeutic type of twist to what I'm trying to do. So basically, the kids get an opportunity to share things that they normally wouldn't be able to share. They get to say things out loud that they're feeling. I've really seen it help these kids kind of process some of the things that's been going on in their lives. And I think that it's very therapeutic for them.
And so, you know, they're learning also technical skills. They're learning some of the soft skills of interviews. You want students to learn more than that, though. What else do you hope that they acquire through these days together?
So the main thing is that I want them to understand that they have options. A lot of times I ask them, you know, what do you want to be if you can do anything? And some of them say, I don't even know if I'm going to be alive. Or some of them say, I want to be a drug dealer or, you know, something like that. And it's like, let me at least teach you this skill so let you know that there's other ways that you can make money and there's other options out there that you don't actually have to do this. And it 99% of the time works.
I wonder, are there any legal ramifications for the students to open up like this and speak their mind or tell their story?
Well, the thing is, we don't record and release it to the public. So everything that we do is confidential. So when they're, so one of the things they can't do is talk about their case. So if they have an open case or something that they did, they can't really speak on that. But their life experiences, they can speak about that. And we keep that 100% confidential.
But I wonder, I want to just throw this out there, but like, let's say they put together a really compelling podcast. They share bits and pieces of their life. Could the results of that podcast be shared with legal representatives or with their judge to show how much potential they have? Like, I made this. They, you know, what do you think of them now?
So the actual judges and lawyers and things like that, they can access it because, you know, they are part of the system. So they can, yes, they can listen to it. And we've had judges and we've had lawyers come in and sit in on the actual class and just to see what's going on. And they loved it.
Sitting in this workshop, as you mentioned, taking place at the juvenile detention center rather than at a library or in a school, is that location, do you think, a hindrance or a benefit to the program?
Wow, that's a good question. And thank you for asking that. So I would say both. And I would say it's a hindrance because when they want to follow up, and like, so say if they really get into it, we don't have the capacity to support them into that field. And I would say it's a good thing because they actually have to be there. They actually have to like participate. We don't have to participate. They choose to participate, but we have their attention. We have them there. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's a good thing and a bad thing.
How receptive has the detention center been to this audio workshop and the program generally?
Well, they love it. They love the program and they love the workshop. A lot of the guards always tell me, man, I can always tell when you're coming in. The kids get very excited. When you leave, they're always in a great mood and they're more talkative and they communicate with each other better. Because they're interviewing each other now, right? Mm. And then I teach them how to speak to one another in a way where you're actually really listening to the person and try to gauge, like, what type of person is it? You know, how should you approach this type of person? And that helps them with their communication between staff and other, you know, kids.
I wonder too, it also, they can bring those skills into the stresses in their lives and the situations they're dealing with. D-Star teaches this audio workshop as part of the Making Justice program through The Bubbler. That's a hands-on community arts program run by Madison Public Library. Call in with a question. Share what comes up for you. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We explore an audio workshop at Dane County Detention Center teaching skills in podcasting. It's called Making Justice, and it's geared toward at-risk and incarcerated youth. D-Star leads the workshop through Madison Public Library's community learning program, The Bubbler, and Star hosts the Oddity Box podcast. Call in with a question. Share your thoughts. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Dee, your podcast focusing on supporting currently and formerly incarcerated people and their families. Can you provide an idea of what the families of students in Making Justice are going through?
That's really hard because some of them don't have families. We actually have a kid up there right now, without saying any names or any details, but she's been there for over a month and she just is just sitting there because she doesn't actually have a family to go home to. So some of them have families, some of them don't, some of them are in foster care. So it's really hard. You know, every kid is different.
Do they talk about family at all in what they're putting together?
Yeah, yes. They speak about their families, sometimes good, sometimes bad, but mostly good, how much they love their brother or their sister or their mom, what their plans are for the future when they grow up and get into whatever career that they want to get into and how they want to take care of their family. So you'd be surprised, you know, how much they actually want to give back to their family.
Do you ever keep in contact with these students after they've taken your class?
Unfortunately, no, because we don't actually have the resources to follow up with these kids and keep track of these kids and provide, you know, additional services for the kids through the Bubbler program right now. But I have seen some of the kids actually in the community. They, you know, gotten out, gone to school, and one of the kids actually does go to the school that my son goes to. So I see her quite regularly. But yeah, I've seen some of them in the community, but mostly when I leave, it's pretty much I'm gone.
I wonder, what have the teens taught you? What have you learned through Making Justice?
A lot of new slang. It's like a different language, right? So I'm up on all the latest slang, all the latest trends, all the latest music. And they taught me a lot about, I want to say humility and being really thankful for what I have. Being thankful for my family, being thankful for my kids, and just continuing to strive to be a person that young people can look up to.
That's really beautiful. Let's bring in a call now. Tyrone in Milwaukee. Tyrone, hi.
Good morning, Kate, and best wishes to the new year to you, your family. Milwaukee, the gentleman on the show there, good morning to you, young man, you and your family. Best wishes for 2024. It's here.
Thank you.
All right, let's go. Let's get it.
Let's go.
All right. Okay, well, a couple things here real quick. I appreciate what you're doing. It sounds real good. You're doing a wonderful job there. Keep up the good work there. We're in an election season. I wonder if you you know, what you're doing there. Let the youngsters know the power of their vote, even though they may not be in the seat or in the office there, but their vote is very powerful.
Tyrone,
they're the ones that everything's going to fall into their hands. I'm in my mid-60s now. So most certainly let them know the power of their vote and what it means, you know, for whoever. And I was wondering, you know, your collaboration. The list is so long, but I mean, do you have anybody working with you, backing you up, you know, like your Von Mazes or your Marquesa Tuckers or, you know, the Cogses or any of those number of people there that, you know, can, you know, Coach Holmes, of course, you know, Father's Initiative, and many, many others. But do you have anybody that you're collaborating with that, you know, that has your, you know, that can give you, like you spoke about, cohesiveness and options and other different things like that, just to make sure that you're on solid footing and, you know, that the rug doesn't get pulled from underneath you and you got some people backing you up there.
Oh, Tyrone, thank you so much. Appreciate you calling in. Dee, go ahead.
Well, in the very beginning, I did have some support from Sheila Stubb, and she made a couple of calls and she did some things. So, you know, thank you to her. But as of right now, I really don't. And yeah, it's unfortunate, but I don't.
And Sheila Stubbs, member of the state assembly, do you see this program have the potential for growing? You know, what you see happening through Madison Public Library, does it have potential to become something bigger?
I think it does. It's just that we need to support, you know, we definitely need to support. The engagement is there. The kids are there. The you know, the need is there. But we just need the dollars, pretty much.
How has this experience changed you as a podcaster?
That's crazy that you asked that, because I really, really feel like I have a duty to do my best, because when the first day, you know, I teach them how to interview. But then the second day when they interview the guest, I see my interviewing style in them. So I see like how I would ask questions, how I frame questions, how I do my due diligence before I actually interview somebody. So I'm like, wow, you know, I'm really like affecting kids. I'm really affecting the next generation of journalists. And so that ties really affected me. It's like, I feel like a more, like I have to be really more locked in about what I'm doing and really take it more serious.
Seems like they're applying what they're learning from you right away. They're just soaking it in and applying it.
Absolutely. Yeah, you'd be surprised how fast some of these kids catch on, because, you know, in anything, it doesn't matter what it is, you're going to have your naturals. And when it's just a breath of fresh air when you see a natural on the microphone. You know, they just take to it within seconds. As soon as they get on the microphone, you're like, wow, this kid could be in radio. You know, it's like, and then you tell them like, hey, you know, you could have a future in this. Like, you're really good. And like, oh, you just say that to everybody. I'm like, yeah, I do say that to everybody, but I'm telling you, you're really good.
Please know this distinction, right? So what are the next steps in working with students and audio production, something with Big Brothers and Big Sisters initiative?
So Big Brothers Big Sisters is a nonprofit that's really near and dear to my heart, because I had two kids that actually went through their program.
Mm-hmm.
So I love Big Brothers Big Sisters. And so during the 6-week campaign, they're having a campaign right now. It's called It Takes Little to Be Big. And during this 6-week campaign, from February 1st to March 15th, the Big Brothers Big Sisters is looking for to recruit 100 new volunteers, bigs, right?
Mm-hmm.
Especially those of diverse backgrounds. Currently, about 200 children are on their waiting list. And the mission is to cut that in half.
Oh,
so nice. They're having their kickoff. I think it's on the 1st, I believe.
Okay.
We can look that up.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Well, you know, Dee, this has been such a pleasure talking with you. Thank you so much for your work. Thank you for joining us.
Absolutely. Thank you, guys.
Dee Starr teaches the audio workshop, part of the Making Justice program through Madison Public Library's The Bubbler, hosts the Out of Dee Box podcast. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Just ahead, we discuss government spending with U.S. Senator Ron Johnson as Congress passes a stopgap bill to prevent a partial government shutdown. Now it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Brad Kohlberg with a story about the tricky act of baking a loaf of bread.
The simple, wholesome act of baking a loaf of bread can fill your kitchen with warm aromas and quiet your mind. That is, unless you're writer B.J. Hollers. For him, it's a little more complicated.
Every now and again, on some late November dawn, as the ice crackles along the kitchen window, I find myself drawn to the leisurely pursuit of baking a loaf of bread. Not by hand, but by following the bread machine's foolproof step-by-step instructions. I measure flour, water, sugar, and dry milk into their proper portions, and then, as instructed in step number 8, use two fingers to create a small well within the bread machine's mixing barrel, into which I pour 2 teaspoons of yeast. Shut the lid, press start, and 3 hours later, I've got bread. But on this morning, 3 hours later, all I've got is a problem. In my burst of baking zeal, I'd forgotten to insert the mixing blade into the bottom of the bread barrel. The result? A sludgy pile of unmixed dough that neither looks nor tastes like bread. Grumbling, I dump my muck and prepare to start anew. I reach once more for the flour, only this time, having squandered most of it, I fall far short of the necessary 4 cups. No matter, I think, I'll simply drive the mile to my parents' house to borrow a bit of theirs. Upon my arrival, I decide not to wake them. Instead, I cat-burgle my way through their front door, silently rifle through their cabinets, and discover their own meager flour supply. I steal all of it, but that still leaves me 2 cups short. No matter, I think, I in the shortfall, I'll simply text my neighbors asking if I might borrow a few cups from them. Within minutes, they reply that, regrettably, they are out of town, which I realize is not the same as not having any. I briefly consider cat-burgling their home as well. What's one more B&E alongside the rest? My quest continues at the gas station, where, in desperation, I purchase a $5 bag of flour. Now, flush with flour, I attempt to restore order to the universe by cat-burgling my way back into my parents' house, this time to return the stolen flour. The task complete, I return home so that I might begin again the leisurely pursuit of baking bread. I whirlwind through the instructions, and then, while lost in the hypnotic churning of dough, I consider the many humiliations I've endured before breakfast. How I managed to turn a 1-second oversight into an hour-long adventure that cost me more time and money than any loaf of bread could ever be worth. The irony is that I have no need for bread. Our bread box overflows with more multigrain and split-top wheat than any carb-loving family could ever enjoy. Had I done nothing this morning, I'd have managed a more favorable outcome. Any number of aphorisms might speak to my failed baking experience. Measure twice, cut once. An ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. And on the subject of stolen flour, possession is 9/10 of the law. But the lesson I most need is the one I'm most reluctant to hear. How, in my attempt to engage in some societally agreed upon leisurely activity, I'm left more anxiety-ridden than ever. Until people like me learn to start viewing leisurely activities as an essential part of life rather than an indulgence, we risk falling victim to another aphorism, burning the candle at both ends. I can't help but feel some kinship with that bread machine. Both of us are hell-bent on trying to reap a reward through constant churning. Yet on this fateful morning, after 3 hours of bread machine surveillance, I notice something new. The mixing blade churns intermittently rather than continually, meaning that for the bread to rise to its full potential, it requires both motion and rest. Work has its place, but so must leisure. The recipe calls for both.
B.J. Hollers is a writer, author, and assistant professor of creative writing at the University of Wisconsin-Eau Claire. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin in partnership with Wisconsin Humanities. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Find more Wisconsin Life at wisconsinlife.org. I'm Brad Kohlberg.
It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We turn to Capitol Hill to examine the debate over government funding and spending limits that Democrats and Republicans will agree to, along with other pressing issues to discuss with Republican U.S. Senator Ron Johnson of Wisconsin. And you can be part of the conversation. Call in with a question. Add your views. 800-642-1234. Senator Johnson, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Good morning, Kate. Happy belated New Year.
Thank you. And to you as well. So Congress approves another stopgap funding plan to avoid a partial government shutdown, allowing more time for budget negotiations. How close are Republicans and Democrats to reaching an agreement on a longer plan for funding the government?
It's hard to say. This would be the third extension, which is why I voted against it. I voted for an amendment to just do a continuing resolution for the rest of the year, so we could turn our attention to a functioning budget and appropriation process for fiscal year 2025. I'm concerned that we're going to just keep frittering away time here, not really come to an agreement before this extension runs out, do another extension, and before you know it, we'll be at the end of this fiscal year, not having funded the next one. So again, the dysfunction in Washington, D.C. is profound.
So you voted against it, though, but essentially then you would have wanted a partial government shutdown.
No, I'm actually opposed to government shutdowns, which is why I held out when we were voting on a minibus to get an amendment to bring up a bill that I passed out of my committee, Preventing Government Shutdown Act, that would have provided automatic CRs, but with some real inducements to get our act together and start passing appropriation bills. But you know, unfortunately, we only had a couple Democrats join us, not enough to get that passed through the Senate. So no, I'm on record absolutely opposed to government shutdowns. And again, my concern is we just keep giving ourselves extensions here. There's no commitment. I mean, we've given ourselves extensions in the Senate. We haven't taken up one additional appropriation bill since that first minibus. So again, this was just my saying, this has to stop. We should just have a year-long continuing resolution, which I voted for, to not shut the government down. But I'm wanting to restore a functioning budget and appropriation process for the next fiscal year. But by the time we actually get something done, we'll probably be halfway through the current fiscal year. This is grotesque in terms of the level of dysfunction.
Fiscal year ending September 30th. What are the key sticking points here among Republicans and Democrats?
Well, the main problem is we are massively spending money we don't have. In fiscal year 2019, total government spending was $4.4 trillion. Then the pandemic hit. The Unit Party went on a massive spending spree. And now our basic baseline is $2 trillion higher than that, $6.4 trillion. Our population since that time has increased 1.5%. Spending has increased more than 50%. It's completely out of control. You know, all we're debating here is the discretionary part of the budget, which is less than 30%. People in Washington, D.C. are just whistling by this fiscal graveyard.
This discretionary spending level, you know, we saw Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer and House Speaker Mike Johnson earlier this month agreeing to a spending level for this fiscal year. Would you go along with that?
Well, Speaker Johnson was pretty well stuck with what Speaker McCarthy had done. My displeasure with Speaker McCarthy was that House conservatives actually got us by the debt ceiling by authoring a bill and then compromising with Republicans to pass an increase in the debt ceiling of $1.5 trillion as the start of a negotiation with the White House. Unfortunately, Speaker McCarthy didn't negotiate an increase of $1.5 trillion. He just suspended it until January 2025, which will increase the debt ceiling by about $4 trillion. again, reducing our leverage to try and get bring some fiscal sanity, some spending restraint to Washington, D.C.
So a bipartisan, meanwhile, a bipartisan group of senators is working on a deal that would tie security aid for Ukraine to more vigorous policies at the southern border with Mexico. Would you vote for aid to Ukraine if it's linked to additional border security enforcement?
I have said publicly I would not only vote, but I would promote a bill that would fund Ukraine if the funding was made contingent on benchmarks being met in terms of actually securing the border. That apparently was taken off the table. Negotiators didn't even talk about metrics. So I have no idea at this point in time what the negotiators are talking about in terms of border security. It's been a secret process behind closed doors. Things have been leaked. Things have been reported. They've been denied. We have a massive problem at the border. It's a clear and present danger. Over 6 million people have been let into this country since the start of the Biden administration. About 2 million of those are gotaways. We have no idea who those people are. We basically don't know who the 6 million people are or where they reside. All the warning signals are flashing, according to FBI Director Wray, that the threat of foreign terrorist organizations is as high as it's been since 9/11. If you're a foreign terrorist organization, how would you send your fighters into America? So it's a clear and present danger. Our problem is we're negotiating with the president and Democrats in Congress who want an open border, who caused the problem. It's trying to negotiate with an arsonist to put out the fire. I do believe Democrats realize the public's being made aware now of this catastrophe at the border. So they're looking for political cover. I don't think they're particularly serious about actually securing the border.
Let's bring in Jim in Bayfield County. Jim, hi. Go ahead.
Oh, hi, Kate. Thank you for letting me speak. And thank you, Senator Johnson, for coming on Wisconsin Public Radio. I feel it an honor to be able to speak to you. I'm a combat veteran of Vietnam, and I just want to tell you an experience as quickly as I can, because I know you're a busy man. January 1969, my unit, I was a medic, a hospital corpsman with the 9th Marine Amphibious Brigade. We were engaged in an operation, and we got in a firefight with the NVA, the North Vietnamese Army. And it was monsoons, and it was raining something horrible. And so we couldn't call in air support to protect us and drive the NVA away. So they knew that, and they continued the firefight. It lasted through the night and to the next morning. And it was a horrible night because we ran low on ammunition. And the next morning, my friend and his entire squad were sent to retrieve our ammunition, our resupply.
Quickly, Jim.
Mm-hmm. They were all killed. Mm-hmm. They were all killed because we didn't have enough ammunition. Now in Ukraine, right now, this day, there are Ukrainians are being killed because we don't support them as they need to.
Jim, thank you for the call. And Senator Johnson there, you're hearing that urgent call for action for additional aid to Ukraine. What do you support?
Well, Jim, first of all, thanks for your service and thanks for the question. At some point in time, you have to face the reality of the situation that Vladimir Putin will not lose this war. Losing is existential to Vladimir Putin. He has nuclear weapons. Right now, we're engaged in a bloody stalemate. And the only way this thing ends is in a negotiated settlement. The sooner the better, because every day that goes by, the settlement's going to get worse as more Ukrainians die, more Russian conscripts die. Take no joy in that. More of Ukraine gets destroyed. So any aid we provide to Ukraine should really be focused on, you know, asymmetrical weapons, showing Vladimir Putin that he's going to be, you know, stuck in a long guerrilla-type warfare like he was in Afghanistan, and force him to the negotiating table. We're not even discussing what kind of aid is going to go to Ukraine. We have no idea what the administration is proposing here. Quite honestly, we really don't know where the more than $100 billion that we've provided initially has gone. So, you know, we need some accountability here, and we also need a strategy in terms of what support is going to go toward Ukraine. We get none of that. We just get, again, secret negotiations. Right now they're talking about bringing this up for vote in the Senate next week. without any of us having seen even a word of text of any of this. So again, it's as dysfunctional as Washington, D.C. is in terms of appropriation. It's as dysfunctional when it comes to a very important, very complex piece of legislation like they're talking about with the supplemental and a border security bill.
We're in conversation with Republican U.S. Senator Ron Johnson of Wisconsin, looking at pressing issues facing Congress and hearing from you. Call in with a question, share your thoughts, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We check in with U.S. Senator Ron Johnson of Wisconsin, getting a better sense of his position on big issues before Congress and hearing your thoughts along the way. Senator Johnson, following the situation in Yemen, President Biden approving an airstrike there targeting the Iranian-backed Houthi group after they launched drone strikes in the Red Sea. So what do you make of Biden's decision to approve the airstrike on Yemen?
Well, I think you have to first go back and analyze the decision of the Obama administration and then the Biden administration of coddling the largest state sponsor of terror, Iran. So between the two administrations, they've literally funneled hundreds of billions of dollars into the coffers of Iran and the Ayatollahs that then is spent on their surrogates, you know, the Houthis and the Hezbollah and Hamas. And so you have to first understand that we have facilitated through coddling Iran so much of this activity. Obviously, we need to keep the sea lanes open as much as possible. A coalition of other nations that want to maintain freedom of navigation is important. We quite honestly, it would be nice if China was helping us in those efforts as opposed to probably running counter to us. So the Biden administration's foreign policy has just been a disaster. The war in Ukraine has driven Russia closer to our other adversary in terms of China. The weakness that President Biden has created throughout America with our open border, 40-year high inflation, the war on fossil fuel, the embarrassing, dangerous surrender in Afghanistan has emboldened our enemies like Iran and their proxies. And that's what we're witnessing right now. So now you're trying to mop up, trying to fix some of the results of that weakness that has emboldened our enemies.
So you approve or support the airstrikes on Yemen to root out Houthi?
Yeah. We have to respond. We have to maintain the freedom of the seas. I mean, Thomas Jefferson did that with the Barbary Coast pilots. I mean, that is why we have a Navy primarily, is to maintain free navigation. And obviously in the Mideast, navigation is extremely important. So, but we need to do it with coalition partners, and we are. It's probably too little, probably too late. But again, you've really got to analyze, you know, why do they feel so emboldened? Why are they taking this action? Well, it's because we've coddled Iran, their sponsor here, during both the Obama and the Biden administration.
Will rising tensions in the Red Sea lead to larger economic ramifications if cargo ships steer clear of that route?
Well, sure. It'll increase oil prices, further destabilize the region. These are very perilous times right now, and they're perilous because of American weakness caused by Democrat and Biden administration governance.
Let's take a call. Jim in River Falls. Jim, hi.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for having this program. So there was talk about our deficit spending and our debt, national debt, and sure, that's an issue, but it wasn't talked about at all within the Republican Party when Trump made the massive tax cuts to the super wealthy. The billionaire class and the millionaire class in this country seems to be doing just fine. It's working class people. You know, healthcare keeps going up. We're spending tons of money on insurance companies and pharmaceuticals because they don't do anything significant about that. And the Defense Department seems to get more money from both parties than they even asked for, with no question, and they don't have any sort of accountability. They don't even, you know, monitor where that money goes to in the Defense Department. which should probably be called the War Department like it was in the past. So anyway, you know, they're cutting programs that help working class people and helping the super wealthy with tax cuts.
Jim, thanks for the call. Senator Johnson, what is your response?
Well, Jim, appreciate your comments. Obviously, I disagree with you. The number one component of a solution is economic growth. So that's why you have a more competitive tax system, which I believe is completely paid for itself. I've been concerned about deficit spending ever since I got here. I vote against so much of this. The real pain that people are experiencing right now is the fact that because of the massive deficit spending, a dollar you held at the start of the Biden administration is only worth 85 cents. That damage has been done. So inflation rates are down since, you know, from the highs, from the four-year high. But again, we've already devalued the dollar from a buck to 85 cents. That's why things still are unaffordable. So deficit spending has a consequence, which is why I've been screaming about it. But as I said, most people in Washington, D.C. are just whistling by that graveyard.
Very quickly here, as we start to wrap up, leaders of the Senate Finance Committee and House Ways and Means reached a bipartisan deal this week to expand multiple tax breaks. The deal would expand the child tax credit. Do you support this tax package?
I do not like social or economic engineering through the tax code. I've been pushing as long as I've been there to simplify and rationalize the tax code. The way you do that is you don't junk it up with all these special deductions or credits for, you know, this social program or that economic program for business. So I just want a simple tax code. So I would be opposing this deal. I don't think it has really much of a chance.
Even though it has a number of business provisions?
Correct. I don't like to economically or socially engineer through the tax code. We need a simple tax code to be far better. A simple tax code with even potentially lower rates would be a better way to get and achieve economic growth, which is the number one component of a solution for all the economic and fiscal problems we have.
Senator Johnson, thank you so much for joining us.
Have a great day. Take care.
You too. Ron Johnson is a Republican U.S. Senator representing Wisconsin, sits on the Senate's Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs Committee, along with the Senate's Budget Committee and its Finance Committee. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Let's get ideas flowing in for this caller-only program. First one of the year, your suggestions for future segments are the topic of conversation. And along the way, we recall great discussions with guests and memorable on-air moments. And your participation here is really important. Let's hear what programs you want us to put together in the coming weeks and months. What do you want to learn more about? What deserves more attention? Join in this caller-only program. The number is 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can email your show ideas to ideas@wpr.org. Kristen from Fond du Lac requested more shows about marijuana regulations and steps toward deregulation. And this month, we talked about a Republican-backed proposal to allow medical marijuana in Wisconsin. And we talked about the measure with pharmacy historian at UW-Madison, Luke Rickert.
I mean, Western-based science and medicine has known about the medical value of cannabis for over 200 years. Mm. And 200 years ago, cannabis was used for a host of different ailments, whether or not it was chronic coughs or pain associated with childbirth, a variety of different issues. And now what we're dealing with is a variety of different ailments, again, related to epilepsy, seizures, pain reduction. And what you see at least in some states like Illinois, they have a list of 50 plus conditions that they use medical cannabis for versus the 15 plus, or maybe it's, I think it's 15 that we've decided to put into this bill.
That there, Luke Rickert from UW-Madison School of Pharmacy. Let's bring in Dave in Verona with an idea. Dave, hi.
Hi. You know, there's a lot of evidence of spraying in the sky. Yesterday morning, the sky was full of what's being termed chemtrails, which is these are not normal planes flying around up there like jets, flying passengers around. There's spraying all over in the sky, and that stuff is coming down and making people ill.
Aerial spraying, okay. And do you find, Dave, that that has been an ongoing concern for you or something that has just come up?
This has been going on for years. In fact, there was a Isthmus report on this about 20 years ago in the Isthmus paper, and a Air Force general responded to that saying, yes, we are spraying in the sky, and it's become much more worse. Yesterday, the whole sky was full of this stuff, and then it rains or snows, it brings it down. People breathe this stuff in into them, and they get ill, and it's affecting plants as well.
Dave,
whatever's in that spray that they're filling the sky with, and it's all over the country.
Dave, thank you for that segment idea on aerial spraying, the cause and reasons. Appreciate that. Scott in Wanakee, go ahead. Scott, hi.
Hi, how are you doing today?
Doing well. Go ahead.
So my idea is to have a discussion about behavior in the classroom, bullying on the playground. I'd love to hear comments from teachers, parents, administrators about the disruptions in our classroom and what we can do about that to make sure we have a proper learning environment for the kids that want to learn.
So disruptions in the classroom, on the playground, and really how to address it to have a more calm learning environment. Is that what I'm hearing?
Exactly. You know, there are kids that are trying to learn and can't. I'm hearing stories about, we weren't able to do anything in class today because the kids wouldn't shut up and those kinds of things. And parents aren't aware, I don't think, if their kids are the ones doing it. So how can we make sure the parents are aware of who is being disruptive in the classroom so that parents can help address it? And the administrators, I think to a certain degree, their hands are tied from a legal standpoint of what they can do. So I think we need some serious brainstorming on what our options are because it seriously needs to be addressed.
Scott, thank you for bringing that to the table. Thanks for calling in as we explore where we should go next. It's caller-only programs. We gather up all your show ideas and the topics you think could use more time and attention. You can also email them to ideas@wpr.org. Let's bring in Sarah now in Milwaukee. Sarah, hi.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing well. What would you like to add here?
I think it'd be great to hear more this year maybe about labor policies. So what you what your employer can control with what you do outside of the workplace and even after you work at a place. So maybe regarding non-compete clauses, but even while you're employed, what their policy can regulate for when you're outside of work, maybe with your social media presence online or even outside of there. I think that line is, especially since remote work proliferated after COVID, I think that line became increasingly blurred. So I think it'd be interesting to see, like, to talk more about what really is appropriate and what isn't.
Have you observed changes in your own workplace around such policies or such governance?
Well, I had changed jobs right around that time, so it's not like I left or I finished college, so I don't have as much experience directly, but I've heard from a lot of friends about, who've struggled to work after having a non-compete clause and then getting laid off during the tech layoffs, and also from other friends who have had who have been fired for working at a second job and their you know, afterwards during their off time, and their employer didn't like it very much. And then based on what they post online, that might not be bad. It might be like a sarcastic joke or something, but it's just the employer doesn't want any attention on the company. And so
Sarah, thank you. Yes. Thank you for bringing those examples of labor policies and also non-compete clauses as well on what companies can and can't do to their employees during their off hours. Tomas in Madison now. Tomas, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. So I wanted to maybe hear, and kind of inspired by the past piece with Ron Johnson, more about the kind of changing geopolitical landscape and the need for a multipolar world, and how the United States specifically should be positioning itself in order to avoid getting sucked into World War III.
What type of expert might you think could address a discussion like that?
I'm sure there are many different types of experts that could weigh in. I'm sure economic interests play a big role, but also human rights experts, all kinds of people, I'm sure, could voice in on what might contribute to the downward spiral and how we could avoid that downward spiral.
Do you follow international news and events very closely?
Yes, as much as I can, and as much as information as is available. Yeah.
Tomas, thank you so much for calling in. Thank you for listening and sharing that on exploring geopolitics and a multipolar world where we're headed. Chris in Port Wing is here. Chris, hi.
Good morning. I'm hoping that you could get Catherine Hayhoe on. She's a Christian climate scientist, very interesting person, and she recently wrote a book called Saving Us, which is subtitled A Climate Scientist Case for Hope and Healing in a Divided World. It's a book about how to start conversations about climate and climate scientists with a wide range of people so that we get a broader discussion about what's going on with our climate, what we can do to it, what the positive solutions are, and just how to break down the barriers that we're seeing in this kind of strangely polarized political world that we're in.
So Catherine Hayhoe, Saving Us, and having an ability to talk with each other and be able to come to the table on climate change with more honest conversations and, you know, really understanding the realities of the climate crisis.
Yeah, it's a wonderful opportunity. There's also one other good book recently put out called Five Times Faster, Rethinking the Science, Economics, and Diplomacy of Climate Change. That's by Simon Sharp. But I would start with Catherine Hayhoe because the Christian perspective on this is very interesting.
Well, Chris, thank you so much for calling in as well as being part of the program as we do a caller-only program, gathering up your interests for future segments this month and beyond. We are going to listen back a bit to conversation highlights. What do you think should be getting more attention in these times? What author do you want to bring to the table? What do you want people to know? Drop us a line, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. It's a caller-only program, and thanks to our producers, we have hundreds of guests each year who bring their knowledge, they bring their experience to share with us in Wisconsin, and we want to know, who do you want to hear from? What are your ideas for future segments? You can send them our way, email ideas at WPR.org. Let's go to Mike in Milwaukee now. Hi, Mike. Go ahead.
Oh, good morning to you.
Good morning.
There's an article that was just released by The Lancet magazine. It's entitled Racism and Child Health Care in the United States. It was published January 17th, 2024, and it talks about racial and ethnic inequalities in the quality of pediatric care in the U.S., a review of quantitative evidence. I could go on, but I don't mm-hmm. want to do that. I think the authors of that article would be awesome to have on. I noticed in the city of Milwaukee, Children's Hospital closed down a very, very necessary pediatric care unit in the Metcalf area. The only thing that was nearby for a lot of parents in that area that don't have cars or would have to take a sick child by bus or walk nearly 2 miles for health care for their children. And St. Francis Hospital shut down the maternity clinic, and there was another attempt of a major hospital closing down health care for children and babies. Mm. And that's happening in Milwaukee, and it's happening nationwide where there's less care and the quality of the care is being diminished. Mike,
appreciate you sharing that article with us and how to apply it here in Wisconsin, looking at pediatric care and inequities. Thanks for calling in. Let's go to another Mike. This is Mike in New London now. Mike, hi.
Good morning, Kate. I appreciate you guys taking my call. The idea I'd like dug into, I do not know who would speak to it well, is the concept of, we have, of course, a national debt that is an annual thing, or the deficit, pardon me. Mm-hmm. The deficit is the annual, and the national debt is the sum of all the deficits, of course. I'd like somebody to put this in perspective of what it means for the future, what we need to do. Given the current divisiveness, I happen to be a progressive myself, which, whatever, but I believe in spending, but I also believe in financial responsibility. And at some point, instead of tax cuts by the GOP, I mean, we need to come together in the middle, which nobody's willing to do. Mm-hmm. I appreciate you listening.
Mike, I appreciate you calling in with that idea. Yes, and we have it down. Randy is listening, wrote to us by email at ideas@wpr.org. And Randy is suggesting talk about food additives and health and worries that artificial colors and flavors are making people more sick and that people just can't afford the natural and organic foods. Randy, thank you for bringing that health and eating type conversation to the table. Jen in Eau Claire is here. Jen, hi.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call.
Yes.
I just wanted to bring attention to the community of cottage bakers that are in Wisconsin. I own a business in Eau Claire, and I and myself and all of my friends who bake and prepare things at home sell at farmers markets and festivals, and we sell out of our homes as well, and it was legalized in 2017.
How has it been going?
Oh, it's going so well. It's just absolutely booming. The reason I called is there's actually a bill being proposed currently. It's Bill 897, and it would legislate our ability to generate revenue and put a few restrictions on our ability to work out of our homes.
Mm-hmm.
So we're all kind of rallying right now, and it would be wonderful if we could maybe have a show with some cottage bakers to inform people what we do and why we do it. And
so right now, do cottage bakers mostly put their products in like in the local community or, you know, like a farmer's market presence?
Yeah, exactly. We sell at farmer's markets, artisan vendor markets, street fairs, any, you know, musical event, you know, you might find a cottage baker at mm-hmm. all of those places or several altogether.
What do you bake in particular? What's your specialty?
I bake artisan sourdough and whole grain treats, and I purchase most of my flour from organic wheat growers in Wisconsin.
Oh, wow. Do you have a secret for that sourdough starter?
You know, I think my best advice is it's not as hard as we're led to believe.
Oh.
It's actually quite resilient. It's quite resilient.
Oh, well, I appreciate you sharing this. Cottage Bakers, I just really appreciate the topic suggestion, Jen, and all the best to you on this effort, and we'll look into the legislation as well. Tim in New Berlin now is here. Tim, hi.
Hi. Yes, I would. Maybe perhaps we could get Caroline Delbert to speak on the morning show, hopefully. Caroline Delbert is a writer for Popular Mechanics, and she wrote an article in Popular Mechanics in the January-February 2021 magazine about wireless transmission of power and how it is taking place in New Zealand right now. As we know, the energy grid in Wisconsin is a subject that's in the news all the time, and new wire power distribution these projects are going on constantly. And if another country is doing it without the lines, that is something that we should know about. And I hope that perhaps she could be contacted on, could be contacted and maybe be on your show.
Wireless transmission lines and what is holding them back here in the U.S. Tim,
right.
Yes, thank you so much for offering that suggestion for a show idea. I also heard Harry in Mount Horeb suggesting Instagram and TikTok star Gary Bredka, who talks about non-mainstream health issues. Barbara in Fall Creek sent along an email to ideas@wpr.org to request a program about expanding the use of electricity to address climate change. And Barbara says the show could explore using federal tax credits to make homes more efficient. Barbara, thank you for that suggestion. Heard from Rachel as well, wrote in by email echoing support for producing more programs about electricity and about sustainable living. Carol in Milwaukee has chimed in, calling to suggest talking about Russian and Chinese oligarchs and hidden money in U.S. banks. What is that about? And Carol goes on to say, would be interested in knowing about inner city politics in neighborhoods affecting housing and housing affordability. We have opened up the phone lines here to find out where you want to take the morning show next. Let's talk about the programming you want to hear this month and into the future at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. What questions you want us to explore? What kind of programming would help your family's well-being? You can be part of this caller only, 800-642-1234, email ideas@wpr.org. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. It's the morning show here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We invite your ideas for future segments on this caller-only program. And the ideas, they're endless on what could make a segment. In recent days, we've talked about farmland preservation, the opioid crisis, the Wisconsin Dugout Canoe Survey Project, and, you know, we've touched on the game of chess. Do you listen for discussions on politics, on health, education, advice? Maybe it's something else. Join in with your show ideas, 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. And we're also looking out for your email of show topics to ideas@wpr.org. Let's bring in Catherine in Milwaukee now. Hi, Catherine.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing well.
That's great. So I am hearing that Rupert Murdoch still kind of has his fingers in the media landscape, and I'd be interested in finding out how things are changing in this election year, whether it's social media, other online, offline programming that's going on, and the whole issue of, you know, where people are getting their information from, and whether that information is reliable, and what can you do about it?
So the media landscape and what it looks like. Rupert Murdoch, who stepped down as chairman of Fox News last year, and other insights on trust in media as well, I would imagine, Catherine.
Right. You know, what do we need to be looking out for? I mean, we're still dealing with a whole issue of, you know, Fox, you know, being sued for misinformation. You know, what else is going on besides that kind of, you know, major network where people are being bombarded with bad information? And it sort of dovetails with the report that just came out on your break, talking about wanting to have patriotism taught rather than civic education. So that's another tool. And I think, like in Florida, there's issues with how the media control is impacting, you know, the education that people are getting about how to be civically engaged. And the monopoly of, you know, different organizations over our media, you know, regardless of whether they're progressive or conservative, is that a good or bad thing? You know, we're hearing so much, for instance, about Sinclair Media owner, you know, purchasing a newspaper in Maryland. You know, what kinds of, how is all of this impacting us as we go forward?
Oh, there's a lot there to discuss, Catherine, and really appreciate you bringing this topic, this contribution this morning. Let's go to Marcus now in Milwaukee. Marcus, hi.
Good morning. First, I'd like to say, Kate, I think you guys are doing a fantastic job. I love your show, as you know, and
thank you.
I appreciate what you guys do. You're welcome. My suggestion is I like to paint, draw, do artistic things in my free time. And so I guess I'm wondering why we don't take and look at using something like glow-in-the-dark paint as a component of the lines that are painted on the sides of roads, because they would actually charge up from the car's headlights as well as from streetlights, and so they wouldn't just be reflective of the headlights, but they'd actually then be emitting some light of their own, too. And I'm wondering if something like that has been looked into, and what opportunities are there to make the roads safer in Wisconsin?
Oh, that's interesting, Marcus. So more technology in striping and more technology in the what we put down on the roads to be able to see lanes more clearly. Do you feel like this is an issue for you and not really able to see all the marks on the pavement?
No, but I feel like it's an opportunity in saving energy with all that's going on in the world with electricity, because if the lights are then able to emit and actually light the roadway to a certain extent from their own glow, which is just light that's being absorbed from the streetlights, which are already going to be on, and then re-emitting it, I think it provides an opportunity for us to look at possible ways to decrease energy bills and save electricity while still providing the same amount of safety and or possibly more.
Oh, that's fascinating. Thank you for that. Slightly off topic, but what do you paint? What do you like to paint?
I like to paint landscapes. I use it to light up the sky so that I can have a painting where when it's hanging in just regular light, it looks like it's a daytime scape. But if you put it in a blue light or an ultraviolet light, then you actually get some of the light being re-emitted from the painting. And so it kind of actually gives the sky a bit of a glow behind whatever mountains and trees and such I've painted on there. And something I really enjoy in my free time.
Ah, neat. Well, thank you for illuminating us.
You're welcome.
And have a good day. We received an email this morning from Jay with several show ideas. Here they come. Jay is seeking more programs about chronic wasting disease in deer, programs about badgers and other wildlife in Wisconsin, and programs about grassroots organizations that are focused on conservation efforts, such as the prairie enthusiasts. So I see somewhat of a conservation and outdoor theme there. And Jay, thank you so much for those contributions. Sherry in Madison called to suggest having on Gladys McCrary, a physician and author of The Well-Lived Life. Sherry, thank you for that author suggestion. A couple more show ideas here from our inbox. Tom would like a program about eliminating indoor air pollution and has concerns about pollution from gas stoves, dust, lead, PFAS, and other materials. We received another email suggesting a program about alternative public schools, such as the Clark Street Community School in Middleton. Wow, so a range of show ideas, segment ideas here, lots of ideas to go on, excuse me, and you can contribute them. This is caller-only program. Share what's on your mind and what should the morning show cover next. What topics and issues matter to you most? You can share them at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. This one's coming in from Betty in Middleton, called in to ask why more isn't being done to reduce drivers exceeding speed limits and endangering others on the roadways. So reckless driving, the status of it, what can be done to prevent it in Wisconsin communities? Betty, thank you for that suggestion. You know, Kathleen emailed us seeking more programs about affordable housing, and we want to take stock of that. In October and November, we produced this range of conversations about efforts to reduce homelessness and housing insecurity. And in one interview, we talked with John, who was experiencing homelessness and identified as an African-American veteran of the Vietnam War. And John said that their VA disability benefits were wrongfully terminated years ago.
I'm a veteran, honorable discharge. I serve this country, and it's a shame. But it's not just me, you know. There's a lot of African-American veterans who are systematically being kicked off the system, taking back their money from them, and they ended up homeless people. It's a bad situation, and I think people need to pay more attention to that.
And you can be like Kathleen and email your program suggestions to us at ideas@WPR.org or call in now, 800-642-1234. And our program page, it's there for you at WPR.org/mornings to submit a suggestion. You can also look back at programs that we've covered in the past. So many things to do on our program page at WPR.org/mornings. So let's see here. Daniel in Madison recently asked for more programs about school choice in Wisconsin. And in October, author Kara Fitzpatrick outlined tensions that came with the rise of school voucher programs in her book, The Death of Public School, How Conservatives Won the War Over Education in America.
This issue came up fairly early on with Milwaukee, where within the first few years, you had a couple of schools or a few schools, really, where they had financial problems or they had even fraud and abruptly closed. And so all of a sudden these kids who are using vouchers to attend this school have to find somewhere else to go. And often they end up going back to the public system. And that issue, that is throughout the school choice movement's history. That has happened in every place where they've had this. And it raises this kind of question of accountability, because if you're giving schools money and taxpayer dollars, and maybe they have shaky finances, or maybe they're not being run very well, and they close, and all of these kids are set adrift, you know, is this kind of a good use of taxpayer dollars? And that question has been there since the start.
That is author Kara Fitzpatrick tracing school choice in Wisconsin and beyond and on our airwaves. Let's go to Nancy in Wautoma. Nancy, hi.
Hi. We just had two huge solar farms go up in the Wautoma area that aren't even going to benefit our local community in terms of relieving our energy issues, you know. And they're on prime farmland, hundreds and hundreds of acres of prime farmland going under the solar farms. And it's not that I have an objection to solars. It's just that I think that there is other land that's kind of a grade B land, old landfills, areas that are not good for cultivation, everything. that there should be maybe a tax incentive for companies to use that sort of land for putting up the solar farms or the windmills, and then that the community that they build around should have some benefit for that, because my understanding is that the ones in Wautoma, that stuff is going a long way away. Hmm. That energy is not going to be even kept in the local community at all. There should be a little more transparency around that, and that maybe even the community should have something to say about that.
Have you had conversations with your neighbors about these new solar farms, and what are they telling you?
Well, that's what they've heard, too. I mean, mm-hmm. we don't know where the energy is going. We just know that we're not getting any of it. And mm-hmm. There are huge tracts of farmland, huge.
Mm-hmm.
And there are two of them just within a couple of miles of each other that just went up in the Wautoma area. And we want to know why it had to go on farmland, why they can't use alternative sites. Because I think you had maybe a speaker some time ago who talked about land out in Nevada and Utah where they had nuclear waste dump sites, you know, where they buried things and the land is no longer usable for anything. Put the solar there.
These are important questions. Yes.
Yeah. Use land that isn't usable for residential or farming or other more high quality kind of purposes. And then the community should be
able to weigh in.
Where these things go up, they should be able to weigh in. And we should also get some benefit from this.
Well, Nancy, I really appreciate you sharing these thoughts. Really important questions that you bring up to the larger discussions that are going on beyond Wautoma to around Wisconsin and solar energy, solar farms. We're collecting your show ideas and also rewinding on some memorable conversations and looking at what topics deserve more time and attention, from solar to conservation to health. You know, there is still time to bring your topics to this caller-only program. The number is 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. It's The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. It's a caller-only program. It's dedicated to you and what you want to bring to these Wisconsin conversations. What are your ideas for future programs and segments? What shows have you enjoyed the most, the least? Which guests should we definitely have back and why? Join in with your program ideas and where we should take the conversation next. We're taking notes. We're taking it all down. The number is 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. We heard from Jerry in Kakana, called in to ask for a discussion of the importance of the U.S. supporting Ukraine and what could happen if that country loses the war. Jerry, thank you so much for contributing to the conversation. Jake is listening as well today, wrote in by email. Jake would like to hear more discussions about increasing salt levels in the Great Lakes, about the increasing salt levels in the Great Lakes and other forms of runoff pollution like fertilizers. So, Jake, thank you so much as we look at water issues around our state. And Vern in Eau Claire County is here. Vern, hi.
Oh, good morning. Yeah, I'd like to talk about electric vehicles. These batteries have such complex charging systems. When it's cold, you have to keep it between 70 and 77 degrees. So a lot of power goes to heating up the car. You got ice and snow on there. There's no way to practical to put in all these charging units. You have to rewire a lot of, you know, houses. Apartments don't have charging units in them. And they're just not practical in cold climates.
Vern, thank you for the call and looking at the challenges of charging electric vehicles in very cold weather like we've been experiencing here in Wisconsin, what that reality is, what happens to the batteries in electric vehicles in this type of climate. Thank you so much to explore that topic, and we can explore yours. Call in 800-642-1234 with your show suggestions, email ideas at WPR.org. We talked with neuropsychologist and professor of medicine Sterling Johnson in a recent conversation and talked about a national study UW-Madison is leading to advance clinical care for Alzheimer's disease and other forms of dementia. And here's part of that conversation.
Each person's different. Their Alzheimer's disease may begin in their mid-50s for one person and their 70s for another person. And their symptoms may not be present till 20 years later. And then the mixture of these other kinds of causes of cognitive impairment may be present to varying degrees. And they may, the timing of each of these additional factors may be different. And that's the challenge, as to how to identify these things in the individual patient so that we can improve their care, so that we can get them on the right treatment and have the right expectations for that treatment as well.
So looking at new breakthroughs, new studies in Alzheimer's disease, and happening right here in Wisconsin at UW School of Medicine and Public Health. Kelly from Clintonville recently asked us to address sustainability issues around the house and how we can help our environmental situation in our homes. And earlier this week, we rebroadcast a conversation with the Washington Post climate coach, Michael Corrin. And Michael Corrin said that it is our individual actions that can make a difference.
Companies are responsible in many ways for a lot of those emissions, as is policy. But if you look at the big picture and you look at how do we get to 2 degrees? How do we keep temperatures from rising above 2 degrees? Behavioral change and individual action has to be part of that.
And bring your climate-related topics you want to discuss and many others as we revisit bits and pieces of conversations from our program. And we also want to know, what should the morning show cover next? This is a caller-only program. We're gathering up all your show ideas and the topics that you think deserve more time and attention. So what topics or issues are important to you? Give us a call. Be part of this caller-only program. The number is 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email us. You can email us your show ideas to ideas@wpr.org. Carl in Duluth is seeking more reports on the controversial gas and oil pipeline that runs through northern Wisconsin Line 5, the pipeline operated by the Canadian energy firm Enbridge. And in December, we heard from opponents of the pipeline. Here is Beth Wallace from Great Lakes Freshwater Campaigns Manager for the National Wildlife Federation.
They are actively operating Line 5 illegally in two locations. In the Straits of Mackinac, they do not have an easement to operate the current pipelines. And on the Bad River Band, they've been trespassing since 2013. They are trying to dismantle sovereignty, their rights to land and water, so that they can earn the right to operate this 70-year-old pipeline until failure. And, you know, the proposal to reroute the pipeline or to put in this tunnel, all it is doing is extending the life of a 600-mile pipeline that has already leaked 35 times over 1 million gallons into the environment. It is not protecting our resources, and in fact, it's dismantling core rights that we all should be concerned about across the country.
And then weeks later, we spoke with Paul Eberth from Enbridge about their assurances that relocating pipelines would continue safe operations.
The fact is that a pipeline doesn't pose a significant threat to aquifers. You know, oil, if oil were released from a pipeline, it doesn't move with groundwater. And there's good research that demonstrates that. Our pipelines have been operating through northern Wisconsin for almost 75 years, you know, line five for 70 years itself. And it's operated safely across the Bad River for that time. We've never had a spill on the reservation. We expect and hope to never have a spill on the reservation. And we expect that the relocation project will make, you know, this safe pipeline even safer.
hearing multiple voices, multiple perspectives. That is what we do on our program. Bring your segment suggestions, 800-642-1234. Sarah in Madison is with us. Sarah, what's on your mind?
Hi. This is a lot softer than the other suggestions, but there's a press in at UW-Stevens Point. I think it might be mostly run by students, like a book press.
Cornerstone Press?
Mm-hmm. Cornerstone. I didn't know about it till a couple months ago, and the books they're putting out are amazing, and they're often tied to Wisconsin. I think it would be great to have some of the authors and maybe the guy who runs it come on.
Well, thank you for that suggestion, and I do hope you tune in because we are having one author who has published through Cornerstone on, and let me see here, R.B. Simon coming on on Thursday, February 1st at 8 o'clock. So I'm giving you a preview there, but that is coming from Cornerstone Press there, one of their authors. But we will continue to explore their work, and we'll continue to explore all your topics, all your suggestions. Thank you so much for your ideas and contributions to The Morning Show. And don't forget, you can still visit our program page, fill out a really quick two-question form to share more with us. Find us at wpr.org/mornings. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.